What's up, everyone? Welcome back to the Rockcast. Jordan here, and today I have Jason Tarwater on with NWTF. So thanks for hopping on, Jason. We're going to talk some turkeys.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it. It's always good for us to get into a different audience, and you know, the Rockcast group is a lot of probably big game hunters, and I'm sure there's some turkey hunters out there, so hopefully we can spread some light on the spring turkey world for some folks.
Yeah, for sure. I think that'd be super cool. I know that you know, there's a lot of Eastern guys that are super big turkey hunters, and then they want to come out west and do the same thing, and it's just a little bit different game out here, I guess. Either, you know, we're right in the middle of turkey season now, I would say. We've been in last week was when season opened, I think. Just here in Nebraska anyways, and I've been taking hunters because I'm an outfitter. And a lot of guys from back east are coming out trying to get their Merriams, and they're like, it's a totally different game than Easterns. And, you know, a lot of these birds were like spotting and stalking, basically, especially now when they're just kind of breaking up, but they're still not responding to calls very well. And, so yeah, I thought we'd just dive into the Western turkey world.
Yeah, no, absolutely. We've noticed the same thing here in Montana. This is like one of the hardest times of turkey season, really, because like you said, they're still grouped up and there's no point for a tom to travel to a call when he's got a harem of a bunch of hens. It just doesn't make sense biologically to him. So it's tough. My favorite time to hunt out here is pretty much May and towards the middle of May. Just seems to like they're a lot more responsive and you can find those toms alone and have a chance at them.
Yeah, that's a really good point, I think. So you guys were hunting out this direction with, like, it would be the first light group for and meat eater, I guess, for the turkey trek. Can you talk a little bit about that project?
Yeah, so the trek for turkeys was kind of an idea that First Light came to us with, you know, realizing that COVID has affected a lot of our fundraising opportunities over the last year. And we've lost a lot of membership base due to that. A lot of our members become a member through our banquet system, and with, you know, gatherings being shut down in most states, you know, we just didn't get the membership renewals that we've had. So they came to us and asked how we could help or how they could help. And it was determined that, you know, they would do some membership drives, kind of shed some light on what the NWTF does, in certain areas. And in this case, kind of that Black Hills area, you know, they swung clear down to Nebraska and all the way up to Montana and everyone in between. But, so yeah, what they did, you know, Ben O'Brien with Meat Eater kind of was the main host. He was along for the whole thing. Kevin Harlander and Ford Van Fossen kind of split it in half. Those guys joined in. And then there were some other folks kind of bouncing in and out also. And we had some staff members as well, you know, highlighting some projects and whatnot. But it was pretty cool deal. Still going on. I think, you know, the hunting's over, but the membership drive that they're doing is still going on till the end of April, actually. So the whole purpose of it was, you know, like I said, highlight some work that we've been doing. You know, in Montana, we highlighted some projects with them. I hunted with them in Montana, my wife and I did, when they started the tour. And then I joined back up with them in Wyoming towards the end of it. And they've highlighted some great work in all the states. And some of that right there around you, we've dumped a ton of money into that area of Nebraska over the years. So they were able to kill a few birds. The hunting was tough. The conditions were tough. When I guess the morning that Ben killed his Wyoming bird, we all got out of the truck and my truck said 6 degrees and, it was like 10 inches of snow. And it's just like, if we weren't there for a purpose, I think a lot of us just would have been like, nah, I'll just hunt a better day. But, you know, we were there to get some content, and you ended up killing a bird at like 6:30 in the morning. So it was pretty cool.
Yeah.
But yeah, they've been pushing it really hard. You know, we've got a link on our website to where people can go sign up to become an NWTF member. And, with that, everybody that does that, gets entered to win a whole slew of items. I think a new Weatherby 18i shotgun, an Onyx Elite membership, and a whole first light get up, that I believe you get on a Zoom call with Steven Ornella, and he kind of customizes it for you. So
nice.
It's kind of a neat deal. It's been really successful. I think as of like yesterday, I believe they were up over 800 members since they started, which was only in the last two and a half weeks. Their goal was 1,000. So it's been really successful for, you know, both sides.
Awesome. Yeah, I think the quickest way I saw to hop on that thing was, like you said, there's a link on the website, and then just through First Light's Instagram, they've got links all posted all over the place on that. But yeah, that's a super cool drive. I'm glad that they're helping out with that. That's a good partnership. Yeah, when you guys were here, we weren't very far away from you, and I should have come over to hang out, but it was our branding weekend, and I woke up on that Saturday morning, and I thought, ooh, that sounds like it might suck a little bit. Oh, snow.
Yeah, it was rough weather. We had, when we were in Montana, we had one good day, like in the 60s and sunshine and fairly calm. And those guys actually didn't get down here till that afternoon. And my wife and I snuck out and almost killed a bird with her bow. But like, that was the start. It was a good start. And then just went downhill from there. It was just snow and rain and ice and cold and just not really conducive for really good turkey hunting weather.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So with that, I thought you made a really good point, how, you know, you don't really, some of your favorite time to hunt is down more in May, which is late season to a lot of people. But I agree with you, especially this year. It seems like we've been having some issues working birds in just this early. But so a lot of guys want to come out and hit the opener. And while I think that there's some value to that, because you're probably hunting birds that haven't been called to or hunted a lot, except for in that archery season, would you tell guys that that's maybe the opener isn't all it's cracked up to be, just because of the time of year the birds are all grouped up and such, that move into that later May, or not really later May, but like mid-May, early to mid-May, could be just as lucrative, I guess?
Yeah, I think so. We open fairly early here in Montana, and I don't even get too excited about our opener, unless we happen to have a bird roosted or something. But you know, like I said, they're still in their big wintering flocks or coming out of them. A lot of times they're still roosting together. And, so it's just really tough, calling. Sometimes if you can sneak in really close with almost a flock of decoys, you might be able to pull a tom over. But as they break up, as you know, April starts getting later into April, they start breaking up and start getting bred. And a lot of times those toms start, you know, getting a little bit more aggressive with looking and searching, and they're just more apt to come to a call. My favorite time of day is, you know, kind of midday, because a lot of times the hens are laying, and during in the middle of the day, and literally toms will be out by themselves just cruising, kind of like a whitetail buck in the middle of November. They're just out looking. And if you can find one, generally you have a really good chance of at least calling him in. But yeah, I always try to recommend. I get a bunch of phone calls as turkey season gets here from people back east, wanting to come out, you know, whether they're trying to fill tags in certain states or they're wanting to get their Miriams. If they're hunting, especially if they're hunting, you know, public land, I always tell them, you know, just be patient, hunt back east when, you know, they probably open up earlier. The weather's probably better. Come out in May, especially if you're willing to put on a few miles on Forest Service ground or state ground or something. And I think the hunt quality would probably just be a lot better.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. I think that's really good advice. So diving into more of, I think some of the questions that I've gotten or people wanted answered was finding birds on ground like that. Here, you know how it is a little bit here. It's a little more open. You can glass more, like especially here on the river. We've got big cottonwood trees that they're roosting in. And they don't really roost in other kinds of trees, but you get in like the forest where there's just all pine trees or something. How do you go about finding like maybe where they're roosting and just finding where birds are and like to be?
Yeah, I use the topography maps. If I've never been to the place, I use topography maps a lot with Onyx, and I try to find high points and ridges where I'll be able to hear a long ways. Granted, hopefully it's, you know, fairly calm out and the wind's not howling, but if you can get to places where you don't necessarily have to see a lot, but you can hear a long ways, usually when birds fly up into the roost, they'll gobble once or twice. Sometimes you can get them with a crow call or owl hoot or something like that and shot gobble. And then first thing in the morning, as you know, they usually gobble a bunch.
Mm-hmm.
No matter what time of the season, they're usually gobbling a bunch off on the roost in the morning. And so what I usually do is, like I said, I'll mark waypoints that look like high areas where I'll be able to listen out over, you know, a big valley or two or three different drainages. And then literally right at, you know, sun, when the sun's going down, when the sun's coming up, try to be there and listen and then make a game plan. And sometimes there's road, you know, sometimes the road systems run ridges, and, you know, I've been known to just get in the truck, drive, you know, a quarter mile, get out, listen for a little bit, get in the truck, drive and do it again. Covering ground.
Yeah. It's a lot like elk hunting.
No, it absolutely is. I know a lot of people don't like to hear that, because it's hard to compare a turkey and a bull elk. But when you look at the techniques that are used, the way you interact with them, when you just look at that and break it down that way, it's very similar. I took two guys over the weekend, really good volunteers for us, have done a ton. They've never spring turkey hunted. So I took them out over the weekend, and, you know, several times they were like, man, this is just like elk hunting. It is.
Mm-hmm.
Usually when you kill something, the pack out's a lot easier in the spring, but,
yes.
Definitely is. But yeah. I mean, the similarities, you know, are definitely there.
Yeah. There was the first group of guys I had this year. They didn't want to sit in a blind very bad and wait them out, which at the time I think was the best way. I mean, I know it's boring, but it's kind of just the way to do it that time of year, I think. But we went out and tried to do a little bit of running and gunning. And I would, you know, go out and we'd drive a little bit, and I'd get out on a point that I knew I could hear ways. And I would just call a little bit with a mouth call. And I think they thought that I was nuts, because they're used to, like, sitting up and just cold calling, basically. Like, if they were going to blow a call, like, they were already going to be set up and ready to go. But I don't know. Can be. It's just a little, I think it's a little different out here too, you know, just tactics are different.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I use a crow call a lot when I'm running and gunning, mainly because I've gotten to situations where I've, you know, used mouth calls or slate call just to kind of locate and get a bird shot gobble. Then while you're sitting there trying to figure out where you're going to set up and make a game plan, you don't realize that bird responded and started running at you.
Mm-hmm.
And then they end up busting you. So if I can, I try to use a crow call, because they will shot gobble. I've gotten a lot, like, really good response from shot gobbling to crow calls. And these give you an idea where they're at, and then you can maybe close the distance and set up and actually start hen calling. But sometimes they won't gobble to a crow, sometimes they will. Same with, you know, if you're just using any other call though too.
with that, let's say like we roll out on a ridge together and you crow call and a turkey gobbles. I don't even want to put a distance to it, but a turkey gobbles. What do you do from there? What's your setup look like?
I always try to read the terrain. If it's really open, you know, it also depends on if you're using decoys. In real open country, I prefer to use decoys because just like elk, those birds will come into where they can see. They'll come in and kind of hang up just like an elk would. If they can see far enough and they think they should be seeing where that call is coming from, they'll just hang up. So in open country, I try to prefer use decoys. When you get into bigger woods, you know, like say like the pines or the Black Hills and stuff, decoys can be good or bad. But if you've got a bird located, especially using a crow call, you know, they're not coming. You just know where they're at. Like elk hunting, if you get into their wheelhouse, there's a good chance you can call that bird in. Even if he does have hens with him, a lot of times they'll get curious enough. I try to use the terrain to set up, if I can, to where they have to like come and look over a ridge, or you know, if there's a hedgerow or something, they have to come around. They'll look, might give you a quick window of a shot opportunity, but that's kind of how I try to approach it. If, like I said, if it's pretty thick, a lot of times you can get really close. You just got to be really light on the calling. But if you've got decoys and you got time to set them up, pretty open country, just try to get, you know, as close as possible, really, in any scenario.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. I like it. At a minimum, what does your decoy setup look like? Or I guess, what does your decoy setup look like, let's say, from like beginning of the season to, you know, through the middle of end of May?
Yeah, I don't get too caught up on that, and maybe I should. I usually run like a half strut Jake decoy and a lay down hen, and mainly because like lay down hen just takes up less room, and a half strut compared to like a three quarter or a full strut decoy, they're just smaller. But I do a ton of running and gunning. I like to put on miles, so I just strap them on my back and go. I've had good luck with that setup early season and late season, but I've also had birds shy away from it both times a year. So I think it kind of depends on your situation, you know, like where where you're at there. Like full strut palm decoy and you know, a couple hens, two or three hens and a Jake decoy, it looks like a little flock. I know a lot of guys will run that if they, you know, can pack it in and out pretty easily, or they can drive real close to where they're going. That works. I've got a buddy that he literally has a 12 slot goose decoy bag strapped on a pack frame with a blind full of Dave Smith decoys, and he sets out an entire flock. And he's got strings on, I think, two of them, so he can move them and turn them. But that's what he likes to do. So I think it all depends on the scenario, but when I am running decoys, usually just because of ease and simplicity for me, I just run a half strut Jake decoy and then, like I said, the lay down hen.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. Gotcha. I like it. Let's just going on to some of the gear things. What do you like for a blind? I've been searching for a really good blind for a while. And as far as pop-up blinds, like here in the West anyways, mine just get destroyed by the wind. And so I'm always on the lookout for good blinds. What do you like using?
The one blind that I have that I use is that Zenek blind. I've got one of the earlier models when they first came out, but I've had that thing up in some crazy windstorms. I've actually had the wind pull the stakes up out of the ground and it tumbled a ways, but it's still fine. But I like it because if anybody's looked at it, they got a really neat window component. The fabric that they use is stretchy, and so you can have like a million different window configurations.
Mm-hmm.
It's not probably the lightest blind on the market for packing, but then I think you're going to sacrifice durability also with that. that's the one I use. I don't hunt a ton out of blinds. If I've got somebody new or a kid that, you know, is probably going to be fidgeting, moving around a bunch, or if it's just like raining and crappy weather and I just have to be out there, I'll throw a blind up. But, man, maybe once or twice a year, I actually turkey hunt out of a blind.
Mm-hmm.
That's just my preference. I know a lot of guys, you know, love hunting out of blinds. It's just convenient and a little easier, and they just like to relax in the woods, and which is perfectly fine. Some of those guys probably kill more birds than I do.
What do you think is the biggest difference between, like, the, I don't know, Western turkeys, more like the mountain turkeys, versus, let's say, somewhere like, I don't know, Iowa, or somewhere where there's just easterns?
So I grew up in eastern Kansas, northeast Kansas. I cut my teeth on, like, big oak hardwood easterns.
Nice.
I think, from what I've seen, everybody thinks that the turkeys they're hunting are the hardest turkeys in the country to hunt. I hear it all over the place. It's really funny. But birds back east are a lot more finicky on the call. It's not necessarily pressure being call shy. I just think that's the way they are. Merriams are very notorious for being very vocal and liking a lot of call. I have thought I was over calling birds at times out here, and they're just running in like crazy. And I wouldn't dare, you know, call as much back home, back in Kansas or eastern Kansas, like I do out here. There's times in eastern Kansas where it's literally, I've tree yelped very lightly just to let them know there's a hen over here. And as soon as they fly down, I've just scratched the leaves occasionally and not called again. And birds have came in because of that. Out here, I think a bird would just get bored and, you know, go find another hen. So I think that's probably one of the biggest differences is, you know, how vocal they are. And then also, I guess the range of them, I mean, you've probably, where you're at, I've seen those birds, they fly down. And as soon as they kind of get their crap together in the morning, you know, a few hours later, they'll be 2-3 miles away.
Yeah.
And, you know, in northeast Kansas, those birds have a real, real smaller home range. And it's just, which is nice if you can figure out, you know, if there's a bird in the area, you know, he's going to be able to hear you from certain areas. But out here, they don't always, especially getting the pines, they don't always roost in the same spots. Easterns have traditional roost areas. So it's just a little bit different from, you know, that perspective too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So those mountain turkeys, are they going to, is it kind of just wherever they end up for the day is where they're going to roost, or do they always seem to have a spot in mind that they seem to be heading to in the evenings?
I honestly think there's some birds that it's just literally like, oh, it's time to roost. So I'm going to fly up wherever I am at right now.
Uh-huh.
It's sometimes it's frustrating because you think you got them pinned down and then all of a sudden you have no idea where they're at. And it could be, you know, like I said, 2 or 3 miles away or halfway up a mountain. So I obviously every bird's different, but I think there's birds out there that literally they fly down and they just start walking, and wherever they end up at night, they'll fly up into a tree.
What do you think is the biggest mistake people make with the mountain birds?
I think there's a lot of people that maybe rely on the road systems and the trail systems, and, you know, going back to elk hunting, a lot of times if you can get off the beaten path, you'd be surprised, you know, what you can find. And we found birds before that were in a fairly pressured area, but they were 4 or 5 miles from the trailhead or the parking lot in areas that you're like, why are you back here? And so I think a lot of people, you know, you can be successful,
mm-hmm.
Sticking to the road system and trying to locate them that way. But there comes a time where I think you need to get off the beaten path, put some miles on and explore some new country.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with that. If you were looking at a map, is there anything in particular that you look at closely when you're going into a new area of even where to start trying to find birds?
Yeah, out here, you know, our birds basically from kind of that western Nebraska, western Kansas, and west, a lot of times they winter on ranches and farms. You've probably seen that in the wintertime, big winter flocks get together. And so, like, for instance, on the trek for turkeys we started in Montana, we all started locating, you know, private ranches around the public land that we were on, and we kind of started there and branched out. Because what happens in the spring is they start leaving those ranches and those farms and kind of scattering up into the pines and the hills. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, early season, definitely, that's where I would focus. And, you know, our birds, there is a little bit of a migration to them, you know, from where they're going to end up in, you know, May compared to where they were in the first part of April. I mean, they could be 5, 6, 8 miles away or more. So early season, you know, food source, something, you know, if there's some crops or even a rancher that's been feeding, you know, hay all winter long, they'll pick through those haystacks, and then focus in, you know, kind of a circle around those ranches. And then as you get into later season, always try to look for diversity, you know, whether it's like pines with little meadows. If you zoom in good on some quality maps, you can tell if the forest is like super thick and choked out, and, you know, in that case, it's probably gonna be pretty worthless for especially turkeys. They like to be able to see. But if it looks really open and, you know, you can almost see the ground on the aerial imagery, it's probably gonna at least be decent habitat. So that's kind of really the only things later in the season. These birds spread out into some crazy areas, so it's really hard to pinpoint specific spots when you get into May.
Mm-hmm. Yep, just have to get after it and burn some boot rubber and just try to find them, pretty much. Sounds like it.
Yeah,
when you're talking about, you know, where to find them, especially around the farms and ranches and such, I think that's when, like, Onyx really comes into play, because you're so tight around, you know, private land, especially if you're trying to do the public deal. You're so tight around private land and maybe tiny little parcels of private and public that you're trying to work around. So I think that's when something like that really comes into play.
Yeah. And I think there's a lot of areas, and we see it in specifically western Montana, where it's not like big farms and ranches. It's just like private 1 and 2 acre lots. That the birds will winter on down low in the valleys. And, you know, I've called birds out of yards up on the public land. And so, like you said, you really got to rely on Onyx to figure out exactly how close you can get and where you can set up and where you can walk. But in some areas, especially earlier in the year, that's about the only opportunity you have, is because those birds just get locked down on a lot of that private land down low in the mountain valleys. And you just gotta, hopefully you can call them across the fence line.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Awesome. Switching gears a little bit back to NWTF. So, like, around my area, which is Chadron, Nebraska, basically, what kind of projects have you guys been doing here? What are you trying to do?
Obviously we're looking at turkey habitat, but in general it's more of forest health, forest management. So a lot of the projects that we've helped with or helped fund, especially in that part of Nebraska, have been forest thinning, logging operations, prescribed fire, trying to open up traditional meadows. A big component in the summertime, the habitat component in the summertime for turkeys, is they need like lush grasses and forbs and diverse forbs for those poults. You get those grasses and forbs, you get insects, and those poults rely on insects throughout the summer to to grow and be healthy, you know, going into the harsh winters that we have. And so we do a lot of forced openings. And then as you get down into kind of like the riparian and river bottom areas, we have a lot of states have certain, you know, initiatives just for riparian areas. And that, you know, we might be doing, helping ranchers fence off, you know, a portion of a stream or a river or a creek just to kind of help protect the stream banks and our cottonwood galleries. Cottonwoods, as you know, they are very important for the wild turkey, mainly for roosting sites. And when you have a whole bunch of cattle, you know, living on a riparian area all winter long, it can basically kill off all of the young cottonwoods that might be regenerating. And so we've lost a lot of cottonwood galleries across, you know, the plains and the west. So we've done, you know, some riparian work in that regard, or just, you know, stream bank erosion projects, things like that. But our main push in that area, you know, from there up into the Black Hills and farther west, is basically just forced health in general. We're doing it on the backs of the wild turkey, but we're just doing it because healthy forest is, you know, healthy wildlife habitat for everything. And wildfire reduction, you know, we've been dealing with a lot of wildfires the last few years in the west, and we're starting to get really, really active on trying to mitigate that with the Forest Service.
Yeah, I like that. You know, it's obviously benefiting the turkeys, but it's benefiting everything else too, and just the total health of the forests and land and such. We live right on the Niobrara River, and we have gotten into some different programs, and have, my dad's been really, really all about like fencing off the river bottom as much as we can, and it definitely makes a difference. Like, you look at some of the stuff that we've had fenced off for even not that long, you know, 5 years, and then you look next door at the neighbors who hasn't, and dude, like in the summer too, when it's hot, the cows just stand in the river, and like all the banks are just that nice green grass and luscious stuff is just all eaten off, and it's just, I mean, you can definitely see a difference, and it's got to be better for the wildlife to have some of that extra. Cover and just places to go. But I definitely think that people should get in on that and do, like, even if you know, just like what we're doing, a private landowner. I'm sure that just like you said, you guys are working with ranchers. So like if you own some private ground and whatever, and you think there's some habitat improvement to be done, I would get a hold of you guys.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And we can at least point folks in the right direction, whether that's NRCS office for, you know, like farm bill programs and assistance that way. We've actually got a slew of cooperative positions across the country it's a cooperative position with us and usually I think it's NRCS. But it's basically like it's easier for us to hold a position and create positions than it is, you know, sometimes like a government agency. And so, you know, it's an NWTF employee, but they're basically supervised out of like an NRCS office. And it's specifically to help landowners you know, better their habitat on their properties, whether it's forest, riparian, or whatever. It's just, you know, more boots on the ground trying to help landowners. Wildlife, they don't know public private boundaries. You know, when we see forest health issues, that, you know, wildfires, they don't know public private boundaries. So private landowners are very vital and very key to, you know, all wildlife habitat.
Awesome. What's the best way to get involved? Like for the common person, what's the best way to get involved with helping do things like that, or just like being a part of the cause?
Yeah. So the NWTF, you know, we're a grassroots organization. So we have a chapter system that's made up of local volunteers across the country. I think we have anywhere from 1,500 to 1,600 chapters across the country. The easiest way is just go to our website, nwtf.org. There's a tab in there where you can like search by state, and it'll bring up the staff that's in that state. So like my position as a regional director, it'll pull up, you know, who the regional director is, who their biologist is. If we have any of those cooperative positions, it'll pull up a bunch of contacts. And really the regional directors, would be probably the best bet to get you in contact with local chapters. If you've got a local chapter around you, and if you don't have a local chapter around you and you want to get involved, pretty much all of us regional directors are going to try to talk you into starting a local chapter. That's just what we do. So, you know, our website's a pretty good starting point. Pretty much every state chapter and almost all local chapters, even they even have a Facebook page, where they do a lot of promotions and stuff. And so, you know, there's always the good old Facebook that you can search out as well.
Awesome, man. Well, thanks for hopping on. Is there anything else you want to close out with?
No, I just think, you know, whether you're into turkey hunting or not in the West, you know, check us out, check the NWTF out, look at what we're doing. We've got a ton of very large landscape level forest management projects, you know, all across the West, Colorado, Montana, even over to California. Some really cool things going on. I've been fortunate enough to tour some of them and even hunt on some of them through a filming project that I did a couple years ago. And even myself as a staff member, it really opened your eyes when you realize what we're doing and the capabilities that we have.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Yeah. And at the very least, I think people should look at the banquets that go on, you know, probably around their area that are put on by the local chapters, and just drink some beer and spend some money.
Yeah. Our banquets are fun. A lot of people refer to our banquets as like the blue collar banquet, because our crowds, you know, it's just the makeup of it. And we always have a ton of guns. This year, a lot of our chapters are trying to snatch up ammo, because ammo's like gold right now.
Yeah.
You know, like my local banquet here in Helena, we've got like 5,000 or 6,000 rounds of ammo. And, you know, we always have, you know, a gun ratio of like one gun for every 10 people in the room. So we're always giving away a bunch of guns, and you know, you can't go wrong there.
No, not at all. Not at all. Awesome, Jason. Well, I thank you again for hopping on, and everybody should check out NWTF.
Yeah. Well, I thank you.